Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Football Friday on The Fan.
It's a man's game now.
This is a Football Friday edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Football Friday with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
We have great expectations.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Football Friday. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it's on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.com/1080AM The Fan, or youtube.com/1080AM The Fan. Thanks, party on, party people. Let's get this thing going. We got a great weekend of college football. Starts tonight. I hope we get a good game. It's on CBS Sports Network, so you know the picture quality won't be great. But Boise State, number 17 team in the country, goes down to Vegas to take on UNLV in Allegiant Stadium.
Dun, 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 dun.
And this should be a really good environment. You should have a lot of Boise fans down there. Should have a lot of UNLV fans there. You got two one-loss teams, UNLV 6-1. Their lone loss coming to Syracuse, which after watching last night's game does not give me a lot of hope. But Boise State at 5-1, their lone loss coming in Autzen Stadium during week two to the Oregon Ducks. Boise has been crushing everybody since that Oregon game.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashton Gentry has been a man possessed. This game, though, is going to dictate a lot of what the college football playoff group of five representative looks like, because the loser of this thing, they're out. A two-loss team isn't going to get in, especially even if they play in the conference championship game and whatever team loses avenges that loss. Two-loss group of five will not be the highest ranked group of five representative.
No, absolutely not. And if you're Boise State, this is the game. You take care of this game, and then you handle business accordingly. You're gonna punch your ticket, because you're gonna probably get some additional love if Ashton Gentry keeps Ashton Gentrying, in the sense of
the public perception of it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's necessarily the right thing to do, but I'm okay with it, if that makes sense. In the sense of, Ashton Gentry is the best player in the country. Their team has lost one game, which is a one-score game that they could have won against the current number one team in the country. And if that is their only loss, there is no way, shape, matter, or form you have any business keeping the best player in the country on a team that is this good out of the college football playoff.
No, they should be in. They should be in. If they win this game, continue to march
and
through,
handle the rest of the business that they need to handle,
and win the Mountain West Championship game convincingly, right?
Yeah.
The one wild card in all of this is, I don't know, you probably haven't been keeping up on the Mountain West standings, but Colorado State is also unbeaten in Mountain West play.
In conference play, yeah.
They don't play
each other.
They don't play either UNLV or Boise State.
Mm-hmm. They got a clear path.
They don't play San Diego State either. And San Diego State is another one of the unbeatens in the Mountain West, that they have to play Boise, and I think they also have to play UNLV later on.
Their remaining schedule is New Mexico, Nevada, Wyoming, Fresno, Utah State for Colorado State.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a pretty clear path to going unbeaten, as if you look at the bottom of the Mountain West standings, Utah State is 0-3 in conference play. Nevada is 0-2 in conference play. Wyoming is 1-2 in conference play.
Mm-hmm.
And then New Mexico is god-awful, but somehow they're 2-1 in conference play. They lost at the beginning. Bronco Mendenhall coach at Nevada,
mm-hmm.
or New Mexico, rather. They lost to Montana State to start the season.
Yeah, the spread in that wasn't Montana State favored?
They were.
Yeah.
They were an underdog to a Big Sky school and lost in that game. They have gotten the luxury of playing both Air Force and Utah State to start their conference play.
If it gives you any indicator, the current line in the Colorado State-New Mexico game is Colorado State by 4.5.
Doo-doo, baby.
So
they're doo-doo, too.
Not great, Bob. I mean, this is a team that Texas beat to open the season 52-0.
Is that good?
Yeah.
I think that's good. But that's a big one coming up tonight. UNLV, Boise State, and look, Ashton Gentry, he does need to be that guy. He needs to be that dude and run all over UNLV, and I hope he does. I hope he does for Boise State. Haj Malik Williams, the quarterback who came in after NIL gate at UNLV, has played really damn well, and they may be better. Ricky White III, the wide receiver for UNLV, he is pretty damn dynamic on the outside. I mean, 46 catches, 614 yards, and 9 touchdowns already this season. But if Boise State can control the clock and have those big runs that Ashton Gentry uses as backbreakers, watch out. That thing is going to get ugly probably relatively quickly for UNLV. I expect Boise to win significantly. They're only 3.5-point favorites.
Which I don't.
They've crushed everyone outside of Oregon.
And again, Gentry found a way to break the big plays. So it's like he can do it against everyone. So, yeah, even at the game tonight, I'll have that one up on the side screen.
There is another one, too, with group of five implications. Notre Dame and Navy play at MetLife. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but Navy is the 24th ranked team in the country.
Navy and Army are both individually wagons.
Could be the fastest game in college football history.
Mm-hmm.
Neither team really likes to throw the ball all that much. Riley Leonard can throw it, but is not...
By definition.
Yeah. Not wildly effective with his arm. And Navy, if the triple option can beat up Notre Dame, that one could get a little spicy. Notre Dame is 13.5-point favorites, and they should win handily.
All it takes is if you're playing in academy, all it takes is... three plays of undisciplined defense.
Yeah.
It's enough to break your back.
A game I'm looking at in Big Ten country, number 3 Penn State at Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Look, I think on the surface with Wisconsin, you go back to the loss to Bama, the loss to USC in weeks 3 and 4, and you say, all right, something's broken there. Since then, they've won 52-6, 42-7, 23-3. They've
righted the ship.
They've given up 16 points and scored 130?
Not bad math.
I mean, 100, like it's like 130-16 over the last 3 games.
You'll take that on any given week.
They are, and I don't care who you're playing. It was Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern. Rutgers has dominant running game, one of the best running backs in the country. Not even like it's like, you got your top two, and then it's like big drop.
Mm-hmm.
But Kyle Monagai
what a guy.
They have been working through some stuff over the last couple of weeks, but 42-7, no joke there. They're starting to throw the ball a lot better. And they have that. It is still Wisconsin football. They are still going to try to run the football. They've kind of adapted and adjusted a little bit more to, you have a good defense. Make sure you kind of protect that defense and the air raid Phil Longo imprint. It's getting more, a little bit more October-y for the Wisconsin Badgers.
Dialing it back.
That's going to be a hell of a game. And Penn State, we know they are.
And we haven't even talked about the fact that Penn State's in the middle of more crap.
I can't believe the way that they're handling this. Two players, if you don't know, two players were accused or facing charges of rape stemming from a July incident. And it happened on July 7th. Police investigated on July 8th. The players were announced to no longer be with the team at the beginning of August. So through the month of July, which for those that don't know, July is usually a dead period for teams and you don't have much contact with your coaches and your strength staff, really all that much, guys that are there working out, they'll just kind of roll in. But if that is what Penn State is going to lean on, is saying, what took you a month and how long did you know? That's not going to fly, because anytime something like this happens, anytime a player gets arrested, anytime police are involved, you know, and you know almost right away.
The first call is usually because they know with the ties to the universities where things go.
With everything that Penn State has gone through,
you would think they'd be better equipped for this.
With the Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno fallout, they fell flat on their face in their response to this. Their response was...
James Franklin was ridiculous.
James Franklin walked up to the podium, got a question about it. He walked away. The pulled a Neil O'Shea, took a drink of water as the SID read their canned statement of, we will not have any further comment on it.
And if you want a copy of our statement, I will please contact me and I'll give it to you. And Franklin walked back up to the podium, was asked again about another question regarding the events and the former players. And instead of doing anything, he just walked away from the podium like a child.
And then they said, anybody have any questions about Wisconsin? And one reporter goes, nope. And then somebody must have raised their hand and he walked back up and did a press availability only about Wisconsin. That is absolutely ridiculous way to handle this.
Childish.
And these guys have not been a part of the team since August, since like way before fall camp. It was like the very beginning of August. Yeah. So less than a month after
Penn State did their due diligence and then said, see you later, bye.
Yeah, but they haven't commented on it. No. Now that the guys are facing charges, all of a sudden people, like, it wasn't like they were like trying to like keep the guys on the team and hide them from anything else. Like, they announced they were no longer a part of the roster. To handle it this way, it's after everything that your university put itself through with the Sandusky and Joe Paterno thing, absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. You would think that they would have a better understanding of how to handle this stuff, and they don't.
They have no idea.
I thought James Franklin acted like a 15-year-old kid.
That was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it's not just the Neil O'Shea water bottle sipping, it was the arrogance and the dismissive flippancy.
Yeah.
That's the part that pissed me off. It was the kind of thing when I watched it on the video, I wanted to walk over and slap the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, be a man and answer the freaking question, dude.
Makes you...
Even if the answer is, hey, guys, we're just not going to comment on this time. But just stepping back and just acting that ridiculous.
Yeah.
Here, Mr. SID, I can't say those 10 words.
Hey, James Franklin, just step up to the mic and say, look, this is very serious.
Yes.
Well, these guys have not been a part of our team this season.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're going to let the legal process carry it out, and we will not have comment until the legal process is commenced.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
We found out what these guys were accused of. We did our due diligence, and we said, nope, they're no longer a part of this team.
It's not hard.
And that is where I have to leave it right now, because there's a very serious matter that we don't want to take attention from. And that is,
it is the bare minimum ask of the coach, and he just skirted on it and then acted like a little kid.
Yeah, I hate that.
No.
I hate that. Makes me want to say go Badgers.
It made me actively not like James Franklin.
Yeah, that was awful.
Yeah.
Just... these schools that can't get out of their own way.
It's not hard to do. Look, it's not fun.
Not just schools. It's anybody. It's, we see it with...
all the time. We saw it with Neil. Like, the arrogance and the dismissancy of it all was just like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Look, all those zeros that come with those checks, this is part of the deal.
No doubt.
It's dealing with something that's uncomfortable. Sorry. Get up there and do it. Even if doing it is saying we're not going to have comment, but you don't defer to your SID and act like a kid.
No.
It's so dumb.
You can't. All right. Well, great college football weekend.
Yeah.
And we didn't even talk about, I got two SEC games that are going
to
be great.
And we can get back to those.
LSU at A&M. Can Vandy do the unthinkable against Texas?
Mm.
Can Vandy do the unthinkable? No, they can't.
No.
No, they can't. I don't think that's going to happen again. It was fun while it lasted, Vandy. It was fun while it lasted. Did you hear about the college baseball recruit?
No.
Oh, dude. He has been 3 weeks in a row. He went on a recruiting trip to Vanderbilt for baseball. They do their their recruiting trips in the fall, and they take them to football games. So he was at the Vanderbilt-Alabama game, stormed the field. The very next week, he took his recruiting trip to Oregon, Oregon-Ohio State, stormed the field. The very next week, he was at Tennessee for his recruiting trip, stormed the field after they beat Alabama. He has been at the three biggest college football games this year. And by the way,
rather nicely.
He's a 6'8" flamethrower out of Bellflower, California, which I bet that means he goes to St. John Bosco.
Yeah, I'll say he's probably a Bosco kid.
So he's like a 6'8" right-handed pitcher that everybody, think of the place that he's taken his trips to. Well, yeah, Vandy, Tennessee, Oregon, and
Vandy and Tennessee are historically two of the best baseball programs in the country.
Yeah.
And Oregon's trying to get there.
And they're on their way up. Yeah. They got into the Supers 2 years in a row. Like, this kid is like living the baseball dream, and he's rushing the field at every single game he goes to.
Not too bad.
That's badass for him.
And he's tall enough to see over the crowd.
That's right. I guess at Vandy, he ended up with the player's helmet, and he was like just holding it in the air.
And a piece of the goalpost.
That's a way to go. Yeah. That's the thing I want to know. Did he go down and throw the goalposts in the river?
Can't admit it.
Can't admit it. Can't admit it. All right. Hey, let's get to a little bit of the hometown team. Blazers got a big one tonight. Well, it's game two. But hey, they got a winnable game? Okay. Danny Dusty on the Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Portland Trailblazers have got a double dip against the Pelicans.
Indeed. Not a back-to-back. But.
No. Tonight and Sunday, they got the Pelicans, which means CJ McCollum going to be out and about, right? And that out and about on the town showing his
teammates. I'm sure
teammates
he'll probably go down to his vineyard.
Yeah.
It's 314 acres.
In beautiful Carlton. Right in your neck of the woods.
It is. Yeah. 10, 12 minutes from my house.
Yeah, 4 blocks.
somebody was asking me with the Warriors the other day where I lived. And I said, past Greg Popovich's vineyard, before CJ McCollum's vineyard, and Casey Holdall chimed in, and just down the street from Channing Frye's vineyard. I was like,
there you go.
It's disgusting how many NBA players have a vineyard or shares in vineyards with like around my house.
It is wine country.
It is.
I mean, I don't think it's because of your house. I think it's probably because of wine country.
It's because of me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You know, every time Pop comes here, he drops off a case of wine in the Blazers locker room.
From his vineyard.
From his vineyard, yeah. It's a little, hey, here's a little something from my backyard, fellas.
From here, I beat your ass, now get drunk.
share it with your friends. Drown your sorrows in my wine.
Pelicans are already banged up. These two winnable games for the Blazers?
I mean, I think any game is quote unquote winnable.
All right, let's go through the what the Pelicans are going through. They don't have a center.
I mean, they do in rookie Yves Missy, but they refuse to start him for whatever reason. Daniel Tice is 6'9"-ish playing center, and then de facto Zion.
Okay. DeJounte Murray.
Out 4 to 6 weeks. He just had surgery on his left hand for a broken hand.
Broken hand.
Trey Murphy's going to be out for probably another month for a hamstring. So
they got Jose Alvarado,
mm-hmm.
CJ McCollum,
mm-hmm.
Brandon Ingram,
mm-hmm.
Herb Jones,
mm-hmm.
Zion Williamson.
Yep.
Yeah, they're beating the Blazers.
Probably. But, you know, they traded a little bit of depth in Dyson Daniels and Larry Nance Jr. in trading for DeJounte Murray. So, you know, losing DeJounte is obviously that leaves a hole. But now CJ McCollum is, you know, perfectly capable of starting and filling that. And I think fully healthy and optimized, the idea was that CJ moved to the bench and sixth man. I don't think he was quite ready for that role.
Yeah.
Which, I mean,
nobody.
The staggering majority of guys. I was like, well, Manu did it. I'm like, yes, the one person in the history of the NBA who willingly and wanted to come off the bench.
Okay, isn't this, though, where the Blazers zigging while everybody else is zagging. Blazers are actually really big.
They are actually the biggest team in the league now.
And when they're going to roll out a team that goes, what, 6'8", 6'6", 6'8",
I mean,
you know, 6'3",
the Blazers, are you talking
5'11"? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, they're tiny.
They go 5'11", 6'3", Jose Alvarado. Mm-hmm. I will not call him 6 feet.
No, he's not.
5'11".
He's my height.
6'3" with CJ. Okay.
He's
Brandon Ingram is 6'8".
Yeah.
He's every bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Zion is 6'6". And then Daniel Tice is 6'8".
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Trailblazers are 6'4", 6'7", 6'9", 6'9", 7'1".
Now, 3 greater than 2.
Mm-hmm. The math problem, it's going to be persistent all season long.
Blazers can't shoot. They got shooters.
Mm-hmm.
To quote Hassan Whiteside.
We got shooters.
They got shooters.
Brandon Ingram in his first game, and you know, he's going to be a free agent, and this is his woo, his courting. Is I saw some people say, well, the you know, teams are going to be disappointed they didn't buy low on Brandon Ingram. I don't think anybody is going to be disappointed they didn't buy low on Brandon Ingram. Him taking more threes makes him more valuable, but he still stops the ball, and defensively he kind of wanes. His consistency of effort is always a thing, and I don't think he's a guy that's worthy of a max contract. But hell hath no fury like an NBA player in a contract year. That's just NBA players in contract years are like it's a dark thing in the league. Teams when they're truly in the midst of competing, they want guys in contract years.
Yeah,
they want they don't want to like.
Oh yeah,
like that is something they're battling, and I think Joe Mazzulla is doing a great job of it in Boston right now. Tatum and Brown and White and Drew, they've all just gotten paid.
Mm-hmm.
They've all just gotten paid. Dealing with that, like, it says nothing of them if they dropped it a notch, because that's natural. When you take the next step and you have that security, you do go,
yeah,
all right, I'm good for a little bit.
I think the entire media calling all of those guys overpaid, though, is probably what... What Joe Mazzulla's using.
But you're not wrong. I mean, you heard what he said at shoot around the other day, right? We're all going to die soon anyways.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of...
He's a psychopath.
Oh, he is. He said, and when I die, I'm not inviting any to my funeral.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, God.
He also,
I hope they play the town at your funeral.
The royal family was in, like, Boston or something, and they asked him about the royal family, and he was like, Jesus? That's the only Jesus, Mary, and Joseph? He goes, that's the only royal family I know.
God.
He's like...
You know, what a psychopath you have to be to have that pocketed?
I will say this. That may be the most American thing Joe Mazzulla could have ever said.
You're not wrong, but to have that be an actual response that you give is crazy.
We didn't throw the tea in that haba right over there to sit and bow our knee to the king and queen and the princes and the princesses. People are saying, hey, wow, Joe Mazzulla, tone it down, going biblical here. I think he's just saying America.
He's America. Also never going to tone it down. It's not an act either. He's cuckoo.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, he's certifiable. It was funny. I was talking to one of the Blazers development coaches the other day before the game. You know, hey, how you doing? What's going on? You know, hey, just controlling what I can control. And I'm like, man, it is game one, and we are that deep into coach speak. He's like, it's not coach speak. You got to believe it.
You got to believe it.
Like, but that's the thing is, like, The positive affirmation stuff is so fervent in professional sports because it is such a huge, huge deal, particularly in sports like baseball and basketball, where there's so many games.
Yeah.
You got to keep it going, and you got to keep that stuff. And I was like, you know what? I know, like, I'm giving you crap. I know it's not fake. I know that. But, like, I'm still going to give you crap because I'm going to laugh at it.
Yeah. One other note on the Blazers. The Blazers officially have the worst defense in the NBA through one game.
Yeah, and it actually got 1 point worse.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
They're the only team in the NBA to allow 140 points per game this season because D'Anthony Melton got one extra free throw.
Yeah, they
in the box score. They didn't lose by 30. They lost by 36, not 35. All right. That makes us all feel better.
Pushes that opening home loss, worst of all time, a point higher.
It sure does.
Like that?
No, I don't.
Coward.
I don't.
Just makes the bounce back that much better, right?
I would prefer this team lose by 5 instead of...
Line is 6.5 tonight with the 36. Pelicans, which I thought was interesting. The Warriors had a 6-point line and the Pelicans have a 6.5 point line.
3 greater than 2.
I think...
They're going CJ revenge game.
I think the... Sure. I'm interested to see how Tumani does on him tonight.
All right.
By interested, I hope he puts him in a straitjacket.
Maybe does the same thing he did to Draymond Green.
Oh, yeah. Little. Oh, no, don't hurt CJ. He's just a little teddy bear.
What? Draymond didn't get hurt.
No, but Draymond's also a lot bigger than CJ.
I like CJ. CJ played a lot of really good basketball here.
He did.
For this team.
I will not argue that point.
He, and I think we should applaud that. He's now in New Orleans, and
sure.
I have zero axe to grind with CJ McCollum.
Great.
I mean, you probably feel differently.
No, we're good there.
I mean, I didn't pay him that money.
I know.
You didn't pay him
that
money.
I don't know. Not at all. CJ and I have gone back and forth more than a few times. I would say it's a love-hate relationship. It's more of a hate-hate relationship.
All right.
But we acknowledge it.
Well, you know what? You got your axes to grind with folks, and that's fine.
We both give each other the limp wristed handshake.
Ew.
Oh, yeah.
Gross.
Oh, yeah. It's about who can make who feel the more
just
awkward.
Dead fish each other.
100%. You just stick it in there. Come up next.
Caught Russ's attention.
There you go. Or worse, stay on the web.
He's back.
What's the worst thing on the earth that you could possibly steal? Think about that. But first, it's the Big Kahuna Sports Center Update.
That's that Hawaiian burger joint.
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Man, that sucks.
Heist flicks may be one of my favorite genres of movies.
Ooh, yeah. I do. They're always good.
I love me. I know what the setup is. I know what the payoff is. I know how this all works. I enjoy that cycle. It's one of my favorite things. I really enjoy it when they have to steal something that's very unique. And I always wonder, what was it?
The Declaration of Independence?
There you go. But they didn't have to sell it. They were trying to protect it. But it's like the last Oceans, was it Oceans 13? Yeah. Where they got the Fabergé egg. And I'm like, who do you sell that to? How do you fence that? How
I've
tight is that,
that
market? Like, you know what I mean? Like
paintings, fine art is always a good one.
Look, you can black market it and whatever,
hell
but it's like,
yeah.
It's very finite what you can do with it as opposed to like stealing money or gold. You know what I mean? Like tangible currency.
Yep.
The reason I get through all of this is because the headline in this story made me stop in my track when it was fraudster steal 22 tons of high value cheddar. And they're not saying cheese as in cash. They mean literal cheese.
This is like, they have a whole series on Netflix called Heist. Mm-hmm. And they have, like, there was the one
the
about...
distillery, right?
Yeah, where it's Pappy Van Winkle and how this, like, roided out softball team jacked a bunch of Pappy Van Winkle and was selling on the black market.
A ton of it.
And that's kind of where Pappy Van Winkle got famous. To be so high over the top in the pricing. But there's also one about maple syrup. Where there is like a Fort Knox of maple syrup.
No, in Canada?
Up in Canada.
No way.
They produce so much of it, they have to control the supply.
Strategic reserve it?
Yeah.
Oh, and that's so hilarious.
Somebody went in and was jacking the maple syrup from Canada.
Wow.
This is exactly like that. Like people go into the depths to go and find things that have a black market value. Like this is the same thing with like escargot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, caviar, like these things that people are like, do people really eat that? Well, there is a black market for these things.
It's nuts. This one, what ended up happening is London cheese specialist Neil's Yard Dairy.
Of course.
Had more than 300,000 pounds as in currency.
Okay, I was like, 300,000 pounds is a lot of weight, but this is Great Britain. So
we're talking, that's like
money.
I think exchange rate right now in the pound is like 1.2. So it's like $600,000.
I'll Google that. And you go ahead and fill us in with the deets.
But they took 950 cloth bound cheeses. So these are like the tied up cloth cheeses. A company that was posing as a distributor, but it ended up being a fake firm.
That is $388,782.33.
Oh, the pound's gone way down then.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, no, I said 1.2. That's right. Because it was two early 2000s. The interesting thing about this is the producers of the cheese, the individual dairies, had already been paid for these. So the dairy distributor, the big one, Neil's Yard, is the one that's on the hook here. So thankfully, it's not the little dairy farms that are going to be hurt. But it was 22 tons of artisan cheddars, including Halfed Welsh, Westcombe, and Pitchfork. They are all award-winning and have high monetary value. So apparently, a 13 sterling piece of cheddar that was 300 grams went for 13 pound or 13 sterling for 300 grams, which is not a lot.
That that's not a lot. That's very expensive cheese. Mm-hmm. And so somebody stole all of this?
Yeah, it doesn't.
What are they doing with it?
I would imagine
it's going to end up like in a New York bodega at a really cheap price.
What I'm saying, like, what do you do with this? and what's funny is,
I mean, if it's not packaged, I guess you could sell it to somebody. Like you, my thinking in this is that you probably have inside job. Obviously,
They knew that they could pose as a fake company because of whatever.
But then you go to somebody who owns like a restaurant and you sell it to them half price and you pocket all the.
Lot of work.
That's like what happened with the maple syrup, and that's what happened with the Pappy that these guys worked at the place and they were like, we didn't know how much this was worth.
Mm-hmm.
We were just taking it and we were selling it and we were making a buck, but it was nowhere near what it was getting resold for.
And the Pappy, I remember, they stumbled upon that it was missing.
Yeah, well, they were taking like a bottle out of these cases that were in the reserve room, and the reserve room wouldn't be touched for months on end.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically untraceable as to when these things went missing. And so, it was really hard.
And even then, there was something that like caused somebody to look deeper into it that would not.
They would have never found it.
No, it was something very innocuous and stupid. And they're like, huh, I wonder. And then they stumbled on the fact that
this thing happens,
which is crazy. But look, I am not making light of this in a sense, but I am. I love the pretentiousness of this, like because this is so rich and hoity-toity. This is one of the Westcombe Dairy, which is one of the producers, like this really high-end cheesemaker. The process of making this cheese started almost 3 years ago when we planted seeds for the animals' feed. So they have a very particular feed that goes into the cows, that goes into the milk. They said the amount of work that's gone into nurturing the cows, emphasizing the best farming practice and transforming the milk one batch at a time to produce the best possible cheese is beyond estimation. And for that to be stolen, it's absolutely terrible. You've already been paid for it.
What are you
worried about? Oh, the thing that you're worried about is your pretentious customers can't get it.
Yes, somebody needs to show them the heist show and say that, no, this is going to be good for
your
cheese.
In the long
run,
man, this is like it's going to drive the value of your cheese through the roof.
Come on.
You're going to have more cheddar in your pockets.
You think the Tillamook cheese factory is like now on high alert? They're like, wait a minute. We got to make sure these coasties don't get in here and start stealing our supply.
Okay, I may have buried the lead here.
What?
This particular dairy, the Westcombe Dairy, they have what's called a maturing cave.
Oh,
which sounds like
right.
A place that you put a football player that has a concussion.
Well, Mike Leach, rest in peace.
Yeah.
He calls that a shed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A maturing cave.
A maturing cave.
But it has a cheddar turning robot.
Oh, of course it does.
Nicknamed Tina the Turner.
Okay. Tina the Turner is the robot turning cheese.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. Some of these places that you wouldn't expect, I bet we're going to start seeing like cheese security now. Like Nike. Nike security is insane, especially around like their design buildings and everything.
They don't
like they don't
mess around with that.
Will not mess around. And so, like, it's always interesting to see, like, you
find the weak points.
Yeah, you do. Because it's probably the
security was probably stronger on the dairy, but not at the distributor.
Probably.
Because, like, who would hit the distributor? Come on now. Where is this cheese black market you speak of? I'm in, RJ, on the Vancouver Fort Dex.
Well, he's a coastie. He's a former Tillamook cheese maker
It's not so much a Silk Road as much as a Pepperjack Road.
That's right. That's right. Maybe a Gouda Road.
Yeah. It's good. It's Gouda for you. All right, come up next.
Well, wait. What's the headline of this?
What was it? Fraudsters steal 22 tons of high-value cheddar.
No. This needs to be who ripped off the cheese. You know?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty good.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that needs to be the headline here is who ripped
Chiefs make a Gouda?
Cheese. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I like this.
Golly.
I like this. All right. Yeah. Coming up next.
Something stinks.
Ooh.
Cheese distributor ripped off.
Yeah. something cut. It's the way we work cut the cheese in there.
Yeah.
Figured out. What's not stinky anymore? The city of Portland behind Major League Baseball?
Woo! Let's go, baby!
We'll see you next year on Danny Dusty, the fan. Major League Baseball, the Portland, might actually have real legs for the first time in the history of its individual pursuit. It's a real thing. MLB2PDX has been churning along, and they agreed to a rights deal in August to pursue land on the waterfront to build a stadium and entertainment district. They still need to obviously finalize and put the money forward to make that actually happen. But there has been a step that has been taken that has not happened at any point in time during the pursuit of Major League Baseball. And that happened today. As Mayor Ted Wheeler said, I'm excited to say we are also going to formalize our commitment with Major League Baseball. Next week, I'm asking the city council to approve a resolution that commits the city partners in the Portland Diamond Project and other partners to move this project forward.
I love it. And we have heard from the onset that city leadership and city officials have actually been playing ball with Portland Diamond Project.
They just they would never say it publicly.
The Portland Diamond Project has been telling us they're working behind the scenes to get movement, to get support, and nothing has stopped, even though they have gone quiet. And that was a strategic move. And everybody that has bashed it. Look, I understand it. You don't have a lot of faith that Major League Baseball coming to Portland is going to be something that is real, right? Because there have been two other iterations of organizations that have tried to bring Major League Baseball to Portland. They have failed. This one came out and they came out guns a blazing, and there was a lot of press and a lot of hype around it and a lot of movement. Then the COVID epidemic happened. Right before that was Major League Baseball going to be in Portland to take a tour of the city, and the protests got violent that were happening around the city at the time.
And literally the path they were supposed to take, the gunshots opened up.
Well, I mean, that wasn't it wasn't on that path, but it was in the city near City Hall. I mean, they were going to come and tour the entire city. Yeah. But there was a gunshot during a protest and they canceled the trip.
Yeah. And it was just so the worst possible.
That happens. The pandemic happens, and everything kind of slowed down for a while. Terminal 2 didn't work out. Something that they were vocal, like, hey, this may not work, but this is the first step in finding a place. They've had several sites that they've looked at and done potential studies for the feasibility of having a stadium there or an entertainment district there. And so I understand everybody has been very standoffish and pessimistic that it could possibly happen. Well, they've been working. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they have city leadership in support and actually public support.
Yes, public support.
Like, that is huge.
It's one thing for anybody to say they're backing us. It's another thing for them to actually put the politicians putting actual equity with their own words forward. And now, Ted Wheeler is leaving office. Mm-hmm. Which makes it perhaps easier for him to say it here, but
he was taking meetings, and look, there were articles written just about his meeting log and having the Portland Diamond Project be a part of it several years ago. Yep. I mean, like, he has been in support of it, but they haven't been at a point where they've gotten to public support of it. Now we get to that point, and maybe this gets the ball moving
a little
bit.
Let's see what
City
Council does next week. Because if they do come out in support of it, that's a big step forward. Because everybody knows, I don't care what side of the aisle you were on, the Portland City Council runs this city, and they have been an abject disaster. And so if you can get them united on one thing and get them in pursuit of it.
They do get in the way. Like the mayor has a very big title. But
very limited power.
Very limited power.
Even more so going forward.
Yeah.
So, again, this is a look. The Diamond Project getting the land right there at Zidell's, great. Like it's the location is perfect. You don't have to deal with the red tape. It's not at Red Tail. Unfortunately, I can't benefit from that now. But I'll be okay. I promise. The views alone from baseball. On the river with the bridges in the background, Mount Hood over the side. Like, there probably won't be many better views in baseball.
And for everybody's like, oh, this is finally this may be the last thing that we hear for a while, but it is a public
sense. Until the land is purchased. Like,
I mean, but this is how these things work.
Yeah.
Like, you've got
I would love it if we had Ryan Smith, who owns the Utah Jazz and the Utah Hockey Club, and they're in their pursuit of Major League Baseball, where they basically said, with Utah up here for preseason, I was talking to David Locke, who started Locked On Network, about how they have turned around the hockey team. I mean, they got word that Phoenix was going to be available. And they got it done in 2 months.
Well, and that's the thing is, but they were ready and they wanted to have another professional sports team. That is the most important thing is that you have to be ready for when a league says, we're sick of it, we're done, we can't do this anymore. Like Phoenix with the Coyotes. And you have to be ready and willing to pounce.
And you have to have somebody with a capital to do it because this is actually an insane thing. So the arena the Jazz play in, they're a single event will not take place in that building from the time the Jazz end the season. So they can fully retrofit it for the NHL. Because the arena itself is not capable of doing that. So they're going to basically rip the entire guts of it out and get it done over the course of 5 months.
So they have locker rooms and underneath the bowels of the place.
And so they can change everything,
be
quick change between.
That's interesting.
But think about that. That hurts your bottom line as an owner who owns a building and gets money out of that. So
concerts and events, those are huge.
That's a big deal. So you have to have people who have the capital, the willingness, and the ability to facilitate this stuff, because Ryan Smith just flat out said it, and maybe we'll talk about it next week. Ryan Smith and Danny Ainge are going to throw a couple $1 million at a high school basketball player. Like, Utah's pushing, man. That state is pushing to become
they're ready to
pretty sports centric. All right, coming up in hour number three, we haven't talked about the NFL. We got a lot to get to. This is a nice little slate we'll dive into here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.